What is this hour called?
The No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
What did I say when I thought I got it?
I have no idea.
It's right for today.
It's right for today.
Oh,
it's,
you know, right. What, Jane? Can you ever be on my side? Ever?
What do you think got me this job?
What do you think got me? Oh, darn it. Shoot. I'm in.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour of the third hour of our show. And I'm going to get right to it because we don't have that much time with our next guest. But March Madness is basically here. And this is your reminder that there is also a women's tournament as well as a men's tournament. And so with that, I am so excited for our next guest. She is an Emmy Award-winning journalist, a number one New York Times best-selling author of What Made Maddie Run. And she's here to talk about her new book, which I, as a kid who grew up playing basketball, as a girl who grew up playing basketball, love. And I'm so happy you guys sent me a copy of it. But Hoop uses... An Insider's Guide to Pop Culture and the Women's Game. Kate Fagan, welcome to As Goes Wisconsin.
I love it. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And so I don't even know how to describe flipping through this book because it is history. It's a history book of the game, but reads like a comic book.
Yes. Yes, that is the goal.
Is that what you envisioned when you first came up with the idea?
Yeah. I mean, I think right away I was like, you know what people won't buy? A history of women's basketball, if you know America. So I was like, you know what I need to do? I need to make it the coolest thing you've ever seen with artwork and comic book art and try to make it so stylish and colorful and vibrant that you are just are drawn to it. So that was the goal from the outset, to make it, I mean, not look exactly like this, but I love the way Sophia Chang illustrated it. So...
And that is the feel. The feel is fun. The feel is inviting as far as just the look and all the illustrations. But it's also, I mean, it is a history. It's almost like a textbook as far as like, it goes back to the beginning of basketball in the late 1800s, right?
Yeah. I mean, so it goes back to 1891 when James Naismith invents the game. And I try to make it so that, like, I'm pulling out the quirky details, like, you know, that he asked for a box and then the janitor brought him a basket. So it's like, we very easily could have had box ball for all we know, you know? And like the heights of the rim are at 10 feet just because those happen to be the balconies in the gym he was working in. So it's like, I'm trying to pull out the interesting details, but we do go back in time. And then I try to, you know, take you through and mythologize and build lore and storytelling around the history of this game, while also being honest about how many times it was canceled and told it was unladylike, or, you know, society in certain states said that you can't play it anymore. So it's both joyful and celebrating these women, but also trying to be honest about what has happened in the 130 years of this game's existence.
And you played college basketball, right?
Yes, so I played at Colorado.
This is a sport that is near and dear to your heart. And then obviously you've been a sports journalist for the rest of your career since college. But how much of researching this book, like how much did you know and how much did you learn?
I mean, I don't know where you are on this, like, you know, history timeline, but I thought, because I knew who Cheryl Miller was, that I was like the historian of all of women's basketball, right? Like, people talked about Immaculata and outside of Philadelphia. And like, I knew who that was. So I thought, there's nothing you can teach me about this game. But of course, there were years to fill in between 1891 and 1970.
Yeah.
And it turns out that there is a lot that happened in there. And I knew none of it. So trying to, like, I was learning and then trying to pull out what I thought was like the crux of the story and all of these different, like, really dynamic moments.
And so for researching it, were there books? Were there other historians who knew it? Or was it just piecing together archives from newspapers and just because it is like so much of the point of the book is the women playing basketball has been left out of pop culture, mainstream mythology as far as what we know about men's basketball, despite women playing for basically almost as long, just not getting any credit or acknowledgement for playing. And so how hard was it to actually find people who've been documenting this for over 100 years?
Challenging.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, and that is part of what the long vision goal of Hoop Muses is to make, to bring some of these stories to a place where they aren't lost to history. But for some of this, you know, if it wasn't for the work of Pamela Grundy and Susan Shackelford, who wrote Shattering the Glass, which starts with Naismith and takes you through, their book was published like 15 years ago, but it takes you through like the early 2000s in the college game and the start of the WNBA, there a bunch of these stories would not have not exist and be easily able to find. So it was difficult, right? You had to have one, usually a woman, who decided this mattered and then spent a couple years documenting it. You know, there are two women who wrote Full Court Quest about this Native American team in 1904 that were the first world champions. And that was Linda Peavy and Ursula Smith. So it was like, if some of these women didn't dedicate their lives to not a lucrative pursuit of taking some of this history and making sure that it was saved, it would be lost at this point.
Yeah. And so this is more, and this is like an opinion question versus not so much on the book, but when it comes to women's sports in its totality, it feels like there's been more of an embrace sometimes of women's soccer or women tennis players. And like, it does feel like there's more of a struggle as far as the same respect or attention or money for women's basketball, despite the history of it, and women who can really play. Like, what have you chalked that up to as far as the difference between the sports or how different women play sports and their persona? Or like, what do you point to?
Yeah. Well, you're in my wheelhouse now. This is something I think about a lot. So there's a lot of distinctions to make. Women, like tennis is a sport where even in the early days, like when Stanford played the first intercollegiate game, but a couple years later, the Stanford administration is like, that was a mistake. This is unladylike. We are no longer playing girls basketball, but they made a distinction. Tennis is still okay. Mm-hmm. And part of that was that there is no physical contact between opponents in tennis. Like you have the net between you. So throughout history, tennis has always kind of been an exemption. So first you have to think of, are female bodies able to collide in the sport? If they are able to collide, we're probably going to have a problem historically in supporting it. And then the next step, because you can still think to yourself, okay, well, soccer is an exemption. Soccer, there's a lot of things at play, but soccer has the built-in benefit of two huge milestones on the sports calendar that they revolve around. So a World Cup is something that you don't need to know anything about soccer or anything about like the infrastructure. And you can just say, oh, World Cup, I get that. Like, I get the stakes of that. I understand that I am wearing an American, the US jersey, and they're wearing whatever jersey. Like, I don't need to tell you anything else. You can get invested. Same with the Olympic Games for them. Like, we all, doesn't matter any gender when the Olympic Games happen. You're like, oh, Olympic gold medal. Yeah, that's exciting. And doesn't matter. I'll watch, like, name anything. I don't want to embarrass any sport, but, you know, shooting and skiing at the same time.
Well,
you know, like, I'll do it. That's right. Like, I'm into it because I get what's baked into it. And so women's basketball has kind of always been at the outside of that. They have the Olympics, but it's never necessarily our focus. And soccer also has the benefit of just kind of being like a girl next door sport. Like, there's no race, you know, there's no race cultural divide.
Yeah.
It's always very white and, you have to have money to play it. So that's my kind of, I could really go on about this topic. I literally did a TED talk on it. So
we'll have to link that in our show notes. I'll go find that.
Please do. Those are the distinctions you can kind of see as you really look into these things.
Yeah. And I know we don't have that much more time. So I kind of, you know, we think about stories. There's obviously so many stories in this book. Ultimately, I think so many, when it comes from the off the page and then into a movie or into HBO series, and you look at, I even looked up in preparation for this interview this morning, I was like, what are like the top women's sports movies? And I think we all think of A League of Their Own, and now this TV series, Bend It Like Beckham, like, and there's just, so like, of the stories you learned, which, I'll give you like two Ooh. To three, so you don't have to pick just one. Which do yeah. you think would make the best series and or movie?
Okay, there are a ton.
Okay.
But like you said, like we did these movie posters, like movies that should have been starring female athletes, but weren't. Like White Women Can't Jump. We've got that with like Arike Ogunbowale.
Which I can attest
there.
To. So, I definitely cannot jump.
No. Me neither. But I remember the one time I got that rebound and I felt like I was flying. Yeah. So there's one in particular, like we all know the Harlem Globetrotters, and like they have survived history, continue to tour today. But nobody knows about these barnstorming clubs that existed in the 1930s and beyond, and they were women's clubs. And there were Black barnstorming teams that came out of Black Chicago, Black Philadelphia that toured the country. And then there was this club named the All-American Redheads. And they kind of came out of the Arkansas, Oklahoma area, and they weren't all redheads. They dyed their hair with henna. And they traveled the country for years, and they would stop in small towns. They played in front of thousands of people in overseas. So to me, if you want to think about like an HBO scripted show of like a 1930s, like the All-American Redheads barnstorming club, it kind of has that A League of Their Own vibe.
Right? Yeah.
The dynamics between the culture and this team, as well as interpersonal. Like, that's a story that I don't understand how it hasn't survived history.
Well, especially because if it's the 1930s, isn't it the Depression? So isn't there a whole other, like, hardship aspect that brings some grit? Yeah.
And then it's pre-TV. So that, and it, they kind of, the advent of the TV set kills a lot of some of these barnstorming clubs that don't have the benefit of being the Harlem Globetrotters. But so it's perfect for this era as well. And people, you know, they're expensive to make, these time period shows, but if we get the right screenwriter.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we have to let you go, but I'm so happy to have a copy. I'm so happy to dive even further into it. Thank you for writing it. Thank you for joining the show. But Kate Fagan, go find Hoop Muses. You can order it now, right?
Yes. It came out Tuesday.
Tuesday.
So, yes. So we will
link it to today's show notes so you can get it for your basketball lovers, male and female alike. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Well, when we come back, three headlines and a lie. We haven't played that in a while. More As Goes Wisconsin. This is As Goes. This is Kristen.
Being homeboy would go one on one, cause playing the game is a lot of fun. Sit by the TV and watch them all, cause Curtis Blow is rapping basketball.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. How fun was Kate Fagan?
She was great. And even though I am not a big sports fan, I really want to read that when you're done with it.
I will definitely. Maybe I'll buy you your own copy since I got this one for free. I can gift it forward.
Just the history of it and the how long it goes back and the last tidbit she shared about the barnstorming teams. Mm-hmm. I love stuff like that.
You should watch Dream On, which is the 30 for 30 that chronicles the 1996 women's Olympic basketball team. And for me, that was the women who were on that team and when I was playing were like who you looked up to.
I'm sure.
And it just talks about the struggles they went to. And then also that was around... Well, no, it was probably another 10-ish years. I think I'm getting the timeline screwed up as far as once the WNBA started. But again, as you are not the biggest sports fan, but you are a big fan of women and women's stories.
And history.
And 30 for 30s are always done really, really well.
I will check that out.
And so I will send you the link for that. And we'll link it that today, too. But I almost, if I had had more time, I was going to ask Kate if she had heard of the book Brief Garland or the movie Believe in Me, which was the girls' basketball movie I was in.
I'm sure she has it. She's got a copy.
Well, I will say the only reason maybe is because I had read a different interview she did for the book. And she said there was kind of a gap in like the 50s, 60s years. And that's when, and it was based off a true story. It was the 1960s, like early 60s Oklahoma. And in the book written by the coach, who he was the coach, it was still when, and I think even for my mom, when she played basketball, you only played half, there was two rovers. So for women's basketball, it was, I think, always three people on defense. I forgot exactly what, but basically some of the players didn't play the whole court. And then, yeah. And so there was something like that, but we didn't, that's not how we filmed the movie. But so she might have heard of it only because in those time periods of trying to find like the last 100+ years, that may be one of the only books written about women, girl basketball players in like the 60s, especially in Oklahoma.
Well, you'll have to send a follow up.
Maybe I'll send a follow up.
You can send her a copy.
I didn't want to embarrass myself and be like, no, definitely not. all right. Well, we haven't played this in a while, so I thought we would. Three headlines and a lie. One is fake. Let's see if you can figure out which one is fake.
All right. I did not cheat, so I don't know what's coming.
Parents force son to watch TV all night as punishment for watching too much TV.
Okay.
Number two. Notre Dame will introduce lower pitched basketball buzzer. No, that's not Notre Dame. Notre Dame, the school. Sorry.
Not the cathedral.
Notre Dame will introduce lower pitched basketball buzzer after the old one made campus swans aggressive.
Gosh, I hope that's true.
Number three, Amazon jungle. Man survives 31 days by eating worms.
Lots of protein. That's what I understand.
Have you ever eaten a worm?
No.
No. I don't think I've ever eaten a worm either. Sunny D introduces new alcoholic drink.
Get your citrus with your vodka. One of those.
So I'll read them again. Parents force son to watch TV all night as punishment for watching too much TV.
Okay.
Notre Dame will introduce lower pitched basketball buzzer after the old one made campus swans aggressive. Amazon jungle. Man survives 31 days by eating worms. Sunny D introduces a new alcoholic drink.
This one's tough today. I can certainly see the parents having their kid watch TV all night as a punishment for watching too much television. I believe the guy can survive on worms in the Amazon jungle. I think that's doable. A drink manufacturer going into alcohol? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that leaves the buzzer that I think is a lie.
Good job.
Really?
Good deductive reasoning skills.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, which it kind of makes sense because basketball is an indoor game. So how would the swans be affected by the indoor basketball buzzer?
Maybe they're hanging around outside the building.
Yeah, maybe they would have been too close.
They're
but
lurking.
Doesn't matter because it's not true. but yes, a couple has sparked debate online after forcing their son to watch TV all night and not get any sleep as a punishment.
Did they stay up with him all? So they were nudging him all night?
Looks like it happened in China. And there's like video of them doing it. And they've blurred out the faces of the kid and the parent. But that doesn't seem like forcing your child to stay up all night, especially when sleep deprivation is actually considered one of the worst forms of torture.
Yes.
Seems maybe there would have been a better way to do that, but it happened. And then a Bolivian man described how he managed to survive for 31 days in the Amazon jungle after he got lost. And he said he drank rainwater collected in his shoes and ate worms and insects while hiding from jaguars and picaries, a type of pig-like mammal.
Whoa.
The picture, this is on BBC News. The picture of this man, he does not look
well.
He looks pretty in pain having been rediscovered after 31 days. But, and then finally, yes, Sunny D introduces new alcoholic drink. Sunny Delight is entering the liquor aisle with a new orange seltzer.
That's there is a certain generation that I can see that really appealing to, can't you? It was the drink of my childhood. Now it's the drunk of my adulthood.
I'm not that demographic. I will not be buying this. All right, when we come back, speaking of drinks and alcoholic ones, Chris Drosner is here for some Wisconsin beer news. We'll be back in a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we have made it to that time of the month when Chris Drosner, executive editor at Milwaukee Magazine and author of the Beer Baron column for the Wisconsin State Journal, is here to tell us and talk about beer. And so, welcome
beer.
Back. Beer. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great. Good to be back.
Good to have you back. And so we actually had too many ideas for stuff to talk about. But the thing that I was interested in, and we haven't talked about it on this show yet, but is an article that came out in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a week ago, that addressed how climate change is making it harder for Wisconsin brewers to get beer ingredients, which feels... Once you kind of read it, it feels obvious as far as, yes, it takes growing materials, it takes growing agriculture to actually make beer. And as climate changes, as that gets disrupted by droughts and floods and all the different types of weather that's happening across the country, of course, that impacts beer. And so I was just interested in like your reaction to that, if this was something that's already been talked about a lot in the community, and it's only now kind of like, oh yeah, like this thing that you'd like drinking could be really impacted if we don't start making some changes.
Yeah, I think it was a good story, and I kind of talked to beer people in the beer industry enough that I have kind of internalized this a little bit, but it's a pretty big concern, and I think the main issue, you know, for kind of regular people thinking about this, it's easy to forget that beer is a agricultural product. It's highly processed, of course, but like hops and barley are the two kind of main inputs, aside from water, of course. And both of those are really sensitive crops to things that you mentioned, like drought and heat. They grow, particularly hops, grow in a pretty narrow belt of kind of temperate climates around the globe. Clustered around the 45th parallel, there's like Germany and Czech Republic and and then the Pacific Northwest, a lot of the areas that are known for hop growing are kind of in that real temperate, you know, cool summers, moderate, you know, cooler winters, but you know, not too hot. So if the hot zone is kind of creeping north, then that's going to be a problem. And then there's like other issues like and I guess barley too is a crop that can't grow in too hot of weather. So you know, that's a big issue. And then of course, like, there's other stuff that phenomenon, I guess, that are kind of exacerbated by climate change. And storm damage is a big issue with barley and hops. You know, hail and wind damage can wipe out an entire farm's crop in any given year. And then you've got like one of the things that's starting to become an issue, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, is smoke damage from wildfires. Like hops are intensely, you know, one of the reasons that they're used is for their aromatic qualities and flavor profiles. And if you have smoked hops, that's not doing it. So, you know, and then of course, like the whole water thing. Like water is the biggest ingredient in beer, and you know, the supply is one issue, but you know, those are both heavily irrigated crops, hops and barley. So you know, if both are big out west, where, of course, there's major issues around water supply in both agricultural and just kind of generally. So, it's a pretty major issue.
It is a major issue, and it's something that the first thing that pops into my mind is just like, oh, is this something that would actually, for people who kind of don't, it is, climate change is never top of mind. Is threatening your beer supply something that would make it top of mind? And I don't know, like I say that kind of jokingly, but also, I mean, if beer starts getting way more expensive, because if the ingredients needed to make it becomes more expensive, would that open people's eyes a little bit more that are still a little, it's the emergency still feels not threatening.
Yeah. I mean, I think, in the Journal Sentinel story you mentioned, they talked about, I think it was the one of the owners of Central Waters up in Amherst. And he mentioned that the price of barley, more accurately malted barley, had gone up seven cents per ton or per pound this year because of crop, crop losses. And that's a pretty big deal, because we're talking about they're using a million pounds of that stuff a year. So that is direct on the bottom line. Is an extra dollar on a six pack going to sway people who are questioning whether climate change is a real big deal or not? I think that our views on this topic are probably entrenched enough that that's not going to be an issue. But I mean, it's certainly something to think about. One of the things that I think is really interesting about this topic in the industry, though, is, I mean, it's like breweries are not great environmental citizens. They use a ton of energy and water. The brewing process, you're boiling large amounts of water, using a ton of water, just in cleaning and everything else too. So, that's a big issue. And a lot of breweries are working to mitigate that. This is like on the front end of climate change, right? Like, we got to stop causing climate change. So they're doing using solar energy, conserving water, Nuclearis. This was mentioned in the story that Nuclearis recently installed a CO2 capture system to keep, their emissions and then actually reuse them, because most breweries buy carbon dioxide, in addition to, giving it off. So, that's nice. But then there's like also this, like Nuclearis especially, it was fall of 2021. I was talking to, their brewmaster Dan Carey about this new beer that he had released. It was a Doppelbock called Gyrator, and it was a fantastic beer. I just wanted to get the story of the beer, and turns out that it was way different than I was expecting. I mean, for like 10 years leading up to that point, he had been working to essentially like future-proof his supply chain. Mm-hmm. So he found this hop strain in Germany that had been basically kind of just not used anymore, wasn't being grown, and wasn't being used by brewers, obviously. And he noticed about it is that it was a strain that is particularly kind of hardy as far as drought goes, and also to disease, which is an issue with drought too. For hops and like hop varieties, I think we talked about this before. There's a lot of different, think of it like apples. You have your Red Delicious and your Granny Smith and your Honeycrisp, and they're all different in flavor and profile and texture and all that stuff. Tartness, same deal with hops. And generally those are bred for like the characteristics that they impart to beer. But a big part of it for the growers is how well they hold up to drought and pests and disease and all that stuff. So Dan saw this one that wasn't being used that he knew was particularly, it did better in hot weather. It did better in hot summers. So it was a hop that could be grown in the area where all these farmers have proficiency and they're expert hop growers that could, you know, the idea was to shift production toward this strain and kind of future-proof the supply chain. And he did that. It took him 10 years to working with a hop breeder to like find the source of this hop, and then with growers to get them to plant it. And then it takes a few years for hops to become after they're planted to become commercially viable. And he did it. It's now being commercially grown. And he used it in as kind of a showcase hop in this Doppelbach, which is like, it's one reason why I love covering this industry, because it is, you know, you go into a kind of a story thinking like, okay, well, I'm going to talk about this beer and it's really tasty. And but then there's so much behind it, mm-hmm. especially with, you know, interesting brewer. I mean, Dan Carey is a pretty singular guy in the Wisconsin, you know, beer scene, just so much knowledge and kind of that, like, I mean, thinking not just 10 years ahead to where he actually got these hops, but, you know, 30 years when, hey, we're going to need hops that can grow with, you know, summers with a mean temperature that's 5 degrees higher, maybe something like that.
Yeah. That's like, I mean, I guess when you're on the lookout as far as protecting your company and your beer and everything, that's the kind of what you have to be looking at. But I just thought it was interesting, and so I was excited to get your input on that story and kind of what you hear when you're talking to brewers. But our guest this half hour is Chris Drosner, who's the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine and the author of the Beer Baron column for the Milwaukee for the Wisconsin State Journal. And apparently it's Fulcrum Month. So what does that mean?
I kind of made that up, but I think of these transitional seasons are, I think, the best. I think it's the best time for seasonal beer. You know, like we've been through. Actually, right now is March, is especially you know, mid March is it's time for stouts again. So like the Irish dry stouts, like, you know, Guinness is the one that mm-hmm. everybody thinks about commercially, but a lot of craft brewers roll out an Irish dry stout this time of year for St. Patrick's Day, obviously. And that's like you know, we think of stouts as being kind of big and heavy and dark, and they are dark, of course, but the Irish dry stout is actually a much lighter in body, a little crisper. I mean, Guinness is like, people see Guinness and they're like, oh, that's a big beer. It's like 4.2% or something.
I know, and it's also one of like the least caloric beers you can order too, besides like a Michelob Light.
Well, that's part of it. Yeah, yeah. It's just that the malts they use are super roasted, like coffee. You know, like the longer you roast your coffee, the darker it gets. That's basically the same principle with Irish dry stouts. But anyway, the point is we're getting into spring beers now, and so everything gets starting to get a little bit lighter, a little bit more easy drinking, with the exception of my favorite spring beer is actually the Maibock, which is a heavy Bock beer, which is a Germanic lager, but it's lightened up. It's not lightened up in body or alcohol percentage. It's still big beer, but they use lighter malts that are tend to be a little bit sweeter and a little bit of extra hopping on these to kind of make them bright and to me, my favorite Maibock every year is Lakefront's Maibock, which is a reliable. It's every year they come out with it, and it's just so good. It's one of those beers where every year I kind of forget that I love it, although mm-hmm. I've stopped doing that now. But every time I'll buy a six pack of it, I'll be like, oh man, this is it.
It's like how some people are with their pumpkin beer in the fall.
Yeah, no.
Not me.
I mean,
but
maybe.
Some people.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take our first break, but all right. No, I guess it's actually our last break of the show. Chris Drosner is our guest. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Milwaukee Magazine beer bracket, because it is the bracket season, because March Madness is coming.
And we have an update on Marquette.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll get that and the beer bracket when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Time. Back porch nights in South Carolina ain't nothing finer. hotter than me, and my girl's chalking up a little lighter, cause everybody's down and the world gone crazy. Don't know how to fix it, but I think, baby, turn on the good times, turn off the TV. Yeah, the only BS I need is beers and sunshine. Oh, beers and sunshine. Oh, beers and sunshine. Bonfires and summertime, time, time.
A garden, what a garden. Only
welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Chris Drosner, executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine and author of the Beer Baron column for Wisconsin State Journal. And it is tis the season. Oh, first, let's get the Marquette update.
Marquette in overtime. Golden Eagles defeating St. John's Red Storm 72-70. And apparently they will next play tomorrow at 5:30.
Well, at least that's some good news, because the Badgers lost last night, and so that was...
not good.
Less good news, especially since... Chris, because you and I are both Badger fans over Marquette, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I feel like that loss is mercy, not something to be disappointed in. Kind of a rough year.
Yeah. It's so, but I was just checking Twitter, and we won't get into it as far as... the guard versus Bo Ryan comparisons and whatnot, because we're going to talk about beer and a different kind of March Madness is coming. Selection Sunday is this Sunday, but there's a different kind of selection for people who are less interested in teenagers playing basketball and more interested in beer. Tell us about the Milwaukee Magazine beer bracket.
Yeah. So I've kind of been the architect of a beer bracket with, you know, using the idea is like you pick, you pick the winner in each matchup, and then you advance instead of like, you know, they play it out. Your votes are what advances the beers. So we did one for the State Journal for a long time. I think it was 10 years, maybe. I don't know, whatever. But Milwaukee Mag's doing well this year, baby. Yeah.
All right.
And we're excited because we're focusing it, as Milwaukee Mag probably would, on Milwaukee beers, okay. And we decided to do craft beers only, so no High Life, no Miller Lite. Sorry, folks, of fans of the macro lager, but you know High Life has won enough awards, so we're gonna. So we've got 16 craft beers, one from each brewery. Yeah, exactly, and. We are voting opened on Monday, so you can go to MilwaukeeMag.com/beer bracket, and you can find the voting right there. If you just go to MilwaukeeMag.com, there's some banner ads all over the site. So
all right,
it's really exciting. Like we've got and you know all folks from pretty much all around the state will probably know these breweries because the ones that we picked, we kind of picked on purpose with their distribution reach, and you know these are breweries that you can certainly get in Madison and probably most of the state. I think you know if you're a beer fan in Wisconsin, you're going to be familiar with these breweries. So, although man, it was tough. Like talk about killing babies. Like they refer to the editors' editing process as like killing your babies. The bubble on this was brutal because there's like. I don't know. There's like almost 50 breweries in the Milwaukee area, and a lot of the ones that I hold very dear are not in this bracket.
So wait, did you have to get help? So because you couldn't narrow it down by yourself? Because in total, there's Third Space Brewing, Company Brewing. I'm not going to read off all the beers, but I'll just name the breweries: Third Space Brewing, Company Brewing, Black Husky Brewing, Mobcraft Beer, Eagle Park, Broken Bat, Gathering Place, Raised Grain, Sprecher Brewing, Enlightened Brewing, Milwaukee's Brewing, Good City Brewing. God, we're the Bruce City, aren't we? Lakefront Brewing, 1840, The Firmatorium, and City Lights. So who's missing that you were like, oh?
shout out to my friends at Component Brewing in Bayview, in the Lincoln warehouse. Great beer, good people, good tap room. Hopefully next year they'll have that penetration into grocery stores and stuff that was kind of part of the criteria for choosing this. Yeah. And I did turn on the bubble to Twitter. I did a kind of a low key Twitter poll about a month ago to kind of like I had a feeling on which one I wanted, and the voting bore that out. So, but yeah, New Barons was just outside the bubble. You know, and there's a lot of great breweries in Milwaukee that are just a different model, you know, like super taproom oriented. You know, it's like you pretty much get their beer one place. It doesn't really work real well for this. So
yeah,
we want this to be kind of the appealing to the big crowd. So
no, and that makes sense. And so to remind us how it works. So if you go and fill it out, is it that you're guessing what's like in, because in March Madness, when you fill out your bracket, you're guessing who the ultimate winner is going to be, or is it your votes count towards?
Yeah, this one is a vote. Yeah, you don't. It's not like we're gonna like grade your bracket and be like you're the winner. No, you're deciding who's gonna win. So, you know, in the I believe Happy Place has won the Madison beer bracket, which was the Wisconsin beer bracket, but the one I was doing for Madison.com and the State Journal. And Lakefront, River West Stein was always like in the final four and never won. That one had a little bit more of a Madison focus, naturally because of the audience there, but, it's fun. There's not technically seeds in these, in like, you know, there's not the numbers next to the beers, but, I think if you look at the graphic, you'll kind of see what you'll be able to tell what the one seeds are. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will link that to today's show notes because this is fun. It's a fun for people who are not necessarily into basketball. There's plenty of other brackets you can fill out this year. Anything else before we let you go and wrap up the show?
Well, yeah, I'll just say like you decide who's winning. It doesn't have to be based on it can be on like some people pick their bracket based on like the nicknames of the mascots
or the colors
or colors of the uniforms, whatever, you know, the whatever you choose is viable. So, and we're going to do voting each of the next I guess it'll be 3 weeks before we get down to a final that I will announce probably live on Facebook or something.
Ooh.
I think it's April 3rd, something like that.
Well, send me the information and I will link that as well. Because one of the things, Jane, I know you're not a beer drinker, but at least you could appreciate that not only did they list all the beers that are on the bracket, but they also listed them with a cheese pairing.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
All right.
This is really cool because we have, our sponsor, Ralph Cheese, came up with a different pairing for each beer too. It's, so it's not like, it's not just some kind of generic, like there's.
It's specific.
Jalapeno
Havarti. Sounds pretty good. All right. Well, Chris Drosner, as always, so fun to have you here and update us on everything. We'll see you in a month, unless we see you on the live stream for the brackets sooner. But for us, that about does it. Drive safely this evening once the snow starts. Stick around for Dueling Tangents or the Chad Holmes Show, and then come back tomorrow at 11 when we'll do it all over again. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.